And welcome back to an all new episode of Kicking It with Keeler here on Full Press Radio. You're kicking it with me, Ricky Keeler, here on a Thursday. And welcome back. I'm excited to be back for episode number 3. Again, follow me on Twitter at Rickinator555. That's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader like in Terminator, 555. Follow us on Twitter as well at Full Press Radio, at FP Coverage. A lot of great shows, great podcasts, great coverage of all the major sports in general, so you're going to want to check that out. We have a great show for you over the next hour plus. We'll be talking with Mark Schofield, who hosts a variety of shows. You know him from the Sco Show on Pat's Pulpit Radio. He writes about the Giants, the Bears, the whole nine yards. He's one of the best minds in football. We're going to play Week 12 Word Association with him in a little bit. We're going to talk about some of the big news in college football, some big games this weekend, including Penn State, Ohio State. We're going to talk about some baseball signings. Will Smith to the Braves earlier today. Yasmani Grandal got signed to the biggest contract in White Sox history, 4 years, $73 million. I think that's a good sign for the White Sox, showing they want to contend. So hot stove starting to heat up. We're going to talk about the Jacoby Ellsbury release by the Yankees. We'll get into the whole MLB, MILB situation with the proposal of cutting 42 teams. We'll see if they actually do that, but we'll get into that as well. But the big story is in the NFL. And the big story is what happened last Thursday night. Pittsburgh Steelers, Cleveland Browns. You all know the incident by now. Myles Garrett hitting Mason Rudolph with Mason Rudolph's helmet. The big news today was that Myles Garrett had his appeal heard on Wednesday by James Thrash in the NFL. And Marquise Pouncey got his appeal reduced down from 3 to 2 games. But Myles Garrett's suspension stayed. And Myles Garrett even said, reportedly, that Mason Rudolph said a racial slur to him over the at about 4 o'clock. The NFL came out. The tweet Mike Garafolo from NFL Network had it. I think a bunch of other prominent reporters have had it as well. The NFL looked into the allegations of a racial slur from Mason Rudolph toward Myles Garrett and found no evidence to support those claims. League spokesman says, I think Brian McCarthy, I think, was a league spokesman, according to Adam Schefter. And it's a dicey situation. Look, last Thursday looked awful for the NFL. On the national stage, have that incident happen, it's an awful look. And you can understand why the NFL acted so quickly, gave Myles Garrett an indefinite suspension, and had it stick. I mean, this is really the first time we've seen that happen. And a lot of people talked about how it was an unprecedented situation, that maybe Myles Garrett would have a suspension just cut to the regular season for this year, and that's it, and not carry to next year. I think this is carrying into next year. And this is a real sticky situation, I think, because so is Myles Garrett lying? That's a tough one. Again, I'm not in Myles Garrett's mind. I'm not in Myles Garrett's head. For me, I wouldn't lie about that, but again, I'm not Myles Garrett at all. So what does it come down to, really? I mean, there's no excuse. You understand, though, if he got really angry for that. But Mason Rudolph has not looked good in this either. I mean, a lot of people campaigned for him to get suspended. I wouldn't have had a problem if it was a one-game suspension, but he got fined. Mason Rudolph, to me, again, I can't put blame on him either. But if you're Myles Garrett, you got to be telling the truth here. And you'd have to hope that he's telling. I mean, obviously, you don't want anybody to get in trouble with that. But it's just a real dicey situation in general. I'm sure it's not the last we'll hear about this. But the NFL decides to stick with the indefinite suspension. And we'll see next year, next offseason, what Roger Goodell and the NFL decide to do, how long it carries into next year. But this is going to be more than a 6-game suspension for Garrett. And to me, it's kind of a surprise. Now, if he's lying about this, you should probably tack on more games just for the lie. But a lot's to still be determined. And really, when you look at it from a Browns perspective, it felt like they lost last week compared to where they won, because they won the game, and it looked like they were starting to get on the right track. They've won 2 in a row. But now to not have Myles Garrett for the rest of the season, it's a tough one for the Browns. Justina Anderson from ESPN, by the way, was the one who had the Myles Garrett alleging that Mason Rudolph said the racial slur, by the way. So we're getting into a lot of topics now. Obviously, if you have a thought on this, feel free to tweet me at Rickinator555 for your take on it. It's not an easy subject to talk about by any means, but we'll try to get through it as best we can. So coming up in our next segment, you're going to hear Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon, Big Blue View, Pat's Pulpit, Pro Football, Matt Waldman's Rookie Scouting for Portfolio. He writes everywhere. And to put a little disclaimer on it, we recorded this on Thursday morning, so if you hear some Steelers-Browns discussion, we recorded it before the Myles Garrett news. To put in perspective why I wanted Mark on the show, I recently joined a Slack channel for what Mark used to host, Locked On Patriots, which is now the SCO show, on Pat's Pulpit Radio. I'm from New York. I don't get to listen to a lot of Patriot coverage. Mark was doing Patriot shows every day, whether it was the draft, whether it was during the regular season, the postseason. And he teaches so much about football. He's one of those guys that like I could watch, we'll hear him break down film, and I could at least try to understand it. I'm not the most technical mind with football, but I do my best to talk about it as much as possible. But Mark's a great guest. I'm excited to finally get him on the show. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Mark Schofield from Week 12 Word Association, previewing Cowboys Patriots. We talked to Tua Tagovailoa and his hip injury and what quarterbacks he likes in college football right now. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Mark. And joining me right now on Kicking It with Keeler is a special guest to the show. I mentioned him a little bit in the intro, but I'll let him introduce himself a little bit more. He's part of many different sites. He's one of the best technical minds on football that I know, and part of the place that I've come to recognize as my Patriot family over on the SCO Show Slack channel. Former host of Locked On Patriots, now the host of the SCO Show on Pat's Pulpit, Mark Schofield is here. Mark, thanks for kicking it with me. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, Ricky. It's great to be with you. Thanks for the invitation. I'm excited to be here, excited to chat with you about what we got coming up this week, and I've just been looking forward to this one.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great game. We'll get into that game in a little bit. So before we get into some of the takeaways from last week going into this week, just tell listeners out there, because I didn't want to mess up all of your places where you write all your fantastic work. So I want to let you right off the bat just tell people where they can catch all of your work on many different teams, places, etc.
Yeah, it is a long laundry list. And sometimes I forget myself, which gets me into a little bit of trouble. But I've got it down pat. So it's Inside the Pylon, Pro Football Weekly, Matt Waldman's Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I do work at three different SB Nation websites, Big Blue View, where I cover the Giants, Bleeding Green Nation, where I co-host the QB SCO Show with Michael Kist, where we talk about Carson Wentz, the Eagles quarterback situation, and then quarterbacks they're going to face in the upcoming week. So in this week's show, we talk about Russell Wilson, for example. We talked a little bit about Tom Brady because of the Eagles-Patriots game. And at Pat's Pulpit, where I do some film work. And like you said, I host the SCO Show over there, which comes out usually 3 days a week. A post-game show, then two shows during the week, usually Wednesdays and Thursdays. And believe it or not, I cover the Minnesota Golden Gophers. I'm actually working on them right now. They've got a bounce back after their loss to Iowa. They've got Northwestern this week, so I'm watching Northwestern film here on a Thursday morning, which I wouldn't recommend for the faint of heart. Northwestern's pretty bad this year. But those are all the places where I do work. I might even be forgetting something if I am. So, footballguys.com. I am a contributor over there. I usually contribute to the staff roundtables every other week or so. And there's a staff roundtable out right now where you can get my thoughts on Lamar Jackson. I mentioned Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry in that piece. What to do if you're approaching the fantasy playoffs. How to get ready for the playoffs if you're a fantasy player. So, yeah, I think I've got everything.
Well, usually if you check out those post-game shows, you're hoping for glorious victory shows, not melancholy, right, infinite sadness. Unless you're not a Patriot fan, then I don't know what to tell you. And I'm your Minnesota thing. Are you find yourself rowing the boat often?
I am a believer in the row the boat philosophy. And I will say this. I know it's easy to make fun of PJ Fleck because sometimes it comes off a little much. It's like, all right, you're trying too hard, buddy. But a couple of years ago, I did go to the Big Ten media days out in Chicago over the summer to see all the Big Ten coaches and hear their presentations. And he came out. It was the like Thursday morning, like 8 a.m. He's at the opening time slot. And if you hadn't had coffee yet, you didn't need it by the time he was done. He's that energetic. Like, I get why coaches might not like him, other coaches, but players want to play for him because he is an instant injection of energy, even on a dreary Thursday morning when every football writer who's there is like, I just want to get on the plane and go home. Like he brought it that morning. So he's an interesting guy to watch. Minnesota has been fun to watch this year. Obviously, they lost last week to Iowa, but they're still in the driver's seat in the Big Ten West. And so they just need to close it out over the next 2 weeks and, you know, serve themselves up to be, I guess, skewered by Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, losing to Iowa was never, like I mentioned later on the show, losing to Iowa was not really a big deal in the grand scheme. Everybody loses at Iowa, it seems, in November. It's just that kind of game. So we'll see what Minnesota does. I'm excited to see if they can beat Wisconsin and give Ohio State a run, or even, who knows, maybe they get to play Penn State again. So
that's true. I mean, that's a big one this weekend.
That would be very interesting. So we're going to get into some word association for Week 12 in a little bit. But before we move on to the future, let's talk a little about the past. Mark, give me your biggest takeaway from Week 11 in the NFL. Could be Patriots, could be non-Patriots. What stood out to you most about last week?
I mean, I think two things. They're both sort of AFC related. We'll start Patriots, and this defense is still a very, very good to elite defensive unit. And a lot of people sort of questioned how good this defense actually was after their loss down in Baltimore. And I think, you know, I said this on my show and I've said it in other places as well. I think the Baltimore Ravens offense is a unique creature of its own. It's not the type of offense you're going to see week in and week out. It poses unique and different challenges for any defense that goes up against it with their multiple tight end looks, the varied skill set of Lamar Jackson as a quarterback and as a passer. And so I think that the defense that we saw against Philadelphia is much closer to where this defense actually is. And you look at what they were able to do against Doug Peterson's unit. They give up the 10 points early. You know, the field goal is, you know, they got gifted a defensive pass interference play. That was the only really big play on that drive, and they clamped down after that. They did give up the 95-yard touchdown drive, but after that, it was like literally punt, 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 turnover on downs, end of game. Like, they shut them out after that, and they did a tremendous job against Miles Sanders out of the backfield. They were ready for him. They were able to get pressure on Carson Wentz. They were able to get him to pull the ball down a couple of times by constricting some throwing lanes and showing him some different looks and, you know, bracketing or doubling Zach Ertz in early down situations and then putting Stephon Gilmore on him in later down situations to really take away where he wanted to go with the football. And so I thought it was a very impressive performance from the Patriots defense. So that was good to see. From a league-wide perspective, I think you have to return to Baltimore and say, look, Lamar Jackson is playing like an MVP right now. It's hard to dispute what he's doing from a football offensive weapon standpoint and from a quarterback standpoint. And so his MVP candidacy continues to grow by the week. And so I think we should sort of take note of where he is right now. And people were hyping this as a huge sort of matchup between two young and up-and-coming quarterbacks and two young and up-and-coming teams. And Baltimore just handled business, you know, 41-7. So that's huge. Of course, we should probably mention what happened on Thursday night a week ago with the Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph situation, which was, and I know people are trying to lay blame at one person's feet or another person's feet. I think both players immediately involved, Garrett and Rudolph, had some blame. Mm-hmm. I mean, Garrett, this is the second to last play of the game. You're up 21-7. You know, you don't really need to take the quarterback to the turf after he gets rid of the ball at a screen throw. Like, you don't need to do that. So I think he started it, and then Rudolph sort of escalated it a bit by trying to rip his helmet off. And then, you know, Garrett swinging down with the Thor of Hammer with the helmet situation. That's an ugly look for the league. And I know his appeal has been heard. We don't know. You know, we expect a decision, I think, by the end of the week. And so it was just an ugly sort of situation. So it's hard to talk about, you know, week 11 of the 2019 season without at least mentioning that.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier in the show, and it really took away from the fact that the Cleveland Browns played a dominant football game. I mean, it looked like that they were starting to find something and maybe find a way to get rolling again, and it felt more like a loss to them than a win because of what happened with Garrett. And again, we'll see what the punishment is if it stays like into next year, if it's just the rest of the season. That'll be interesting to watch. To me, I think an interesting thing besides the Patriots and the Ravens, because I was going to bring that up as well. Maybe under the radar a little bit, Kirk Cousins won a comeback game in the fourth quarter. Yeah. And we never see that. And to me, you look at the Vikings right now, and we'll get into them more later, I'm sure, when we talk about their Week 12 matchup. But for Kirk Cousins to finally get that another monkey off his back in a way, it's not a big opponent. I mean, it's the Denver Broncos, but still, to come from 20 points down. And you kind of have to look at the Vikings, the NFC. The NFC, let's face it, is more competitive than the AFC. AFC, to me, is a kind of a three-horse race. We'll have to see what Houston is. We'll have to see what if the Colts, with all their injuries, can sort of stay in the mix. for the Vikings, are really nobody's talking about them with the Packers, the Niners, the Saints, Seattle. But Minnesota's right there. Their offense is starting to click.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ricky. And, you know, a couple of things to mention about Kirk Cousins is, you know, one, he's finally in an offensive design, I think, that is tailored to what he does best as a quarterback. One of the things being thrown off of play action. And when you look back to his days at Washington, even when they couldn't run the ball, their DVOA on play action plays was a huge leap over their DVOA on non-play action plays. And now he's in a system. Look, they want to run the ball with Dalvin Cook. You know, they want to get the ground game going and then build in play action stuff off of that. And so that's where they want to be. But in this game, look, they had to throw it. You know, they had to put it in Kirk Cousins' hands. And again, it's the Denver Broncos, not the world's toughest opponent, but it's still a come from behind victory in the fourth quarter. And he's having another MVP type year. You know, I mentioned Jackson. He's another guy that's having an MVP type season that you said people aren't talking about. I think he deserves a ton of credit for what he's done to date. And like you mentioned, people are saying San Francisco and Green Bay and maybe Dallas as, you know, the good teams in the NFC. You can't ignore what Minnesota is doing right now. They've got a very good defense. They've got a varied offensive look that they're running extremely well. And Kirk Cousins is playing at a high level.
So let's get into week 12 word association, looking at all the matchups. And for those who are not familiar with this segment, since we're only three episodes into the show, I throw out a matchup for week 12. Mark and I will give the first word or phrase for the matchup that pops into our head. It could be anything, so this could be a lot of fun. Let's start with Thursday's game. I won't have you give a word, Mark, because as the show goes live, this matchup will be going on, so it would be unfair to kind of give a word and then have it be totally different than what we talked about. But Colts and Texans playing for the AFC South. Indy won't have Marlon Mack. Hopefully they have T.Y. Hilton. We'll see if he plays. The Texans, like you mentioned earlier, coming off that rough loss at Baltimore. I think we kind of have to see if the Texans are for real in this game, just because I want to see if they can. Yes, they went to Kansas City and won, but that was a real stinker in Baltimore that kind of makes you wonder, okay, can Bill O'Brien finally beat the Colts when they're not even at full strength? What are you looking for in this matchup, and who are you leaning to? Because this one seems up in the air to me. You could go both ways on this.
Yeah, it does sort of seem up in the air. And on these Thursday night games, I always tend to give the home team the benefit of the doubt. I mean, the short week, the travel, we've seen that road teams often struggle to win in these environments. You know, I think the phrase that sort of comes to mind will be consistency. I mean, what are we going to see from Houston? I mean, they're coming off a bad loss where they looked like they didn't belong on the same field with Baltimore. And so we haven't seen that consistency from them. Will we ever see it? Will we see it down the stretch this year? We don't know. But while I give the edge to Houston, I think we do want to see consistency from them.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be the key in Deshaun Watson. This has to be a big game for him. We'll see what happens tonight on Fox and NFL Network. Let's take a look at the Sunday games. We'll start with the game in Atlanta, 1 o'clock on Fox. Battle of 3-7s, Bucks and Falcons. Mark, what's your word or phrase for this one?
Disparity. And it's disparity at the quarterback position because Matt Ryan, I think ever since his MVP season, the year that they went to the Super Bowl against the Patriots, like he's sort of flown back under the radar. He's still a very good quarterback. But then you look at Jameis Winston, and many, myself included, thought that this might be a year where he could put it all together under Bruce Arians, the quarterback whisperer. You thought that there was going to be an offense that would sort of, you know, tailor to his skill set, letting him throw the ball downfield, letting him be a little bit aggressive. We know Arians likes to say no risk it, no biscuit. And it hasn't clicked. And you wonder about Winston's future with Tampa Bay, whether he's going to be their guy, whether they're going to give him, you know, that fifth year, or they're going to just move on from him. So the disparity at the quarterback position comes to mind.
For me, it's similar along those lines. I'm going lots of passing, considering the Falcons don't really have a running game right now to speak of. So Matt Ryan might get 55 attempts in this game. Who knows? And Jameis Winston might get 45 attempts because it might be four interceptions out of those 45 attempts because – it seems lately since Mike Evans didn't get any catches, he forces everything to Mike Evans. Chris Godwin doesn't really get involved as much. Matt Ryan loves to throw the ball in the Bucs. So you might get at least 100 passing attempts in this game. So if you like passing, the game might not, the talent might not be great, but you'll enjoy this game probably.
There you go.
Let's go to the next one on CBS. 3-7 Broncos off that rough loss in Minnesota against the 7-3 Bills. And Mark, I'm liking these Bills. I think another team that's not getting a lot of mention, that's playing good defense. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, a phrase that comes to mind is don't sleep on them. And that's with respect to the Buffalo Bills, because as Patriots fans, you know, Ricky, you and I have seen what this Bills defense can do. They've frustrated Tom Brady. They've infuriated Tom Brady. They've, you know, slowed this offense down. And while the Patriots offense last year and into this year hasn't been like the well-oiled, high-powered machine we've seen in the past, the Bills have been able to really put the clamps on them, and they've been able to frustrate Tom Brady. And when you add to that now Josh Allen, there's a great piece that came out this week from Robert Mays at The Ringer about Josh Allen's development as a passer, and there's a quote in there where he was talking about a throw that he made and said, that's a touch type of throw that I couldn't make last year. You're starting to see him grow into the quarterback position. And so this is a team that you hear it every sort of playoff season, the proverbial team nobody wants to play. And while you might think that like Baltimore might be that in the AFC right now, I think you have to put Buffalo in that mix. I don't think teams are going to be happy to see Buffalo come to town come the postseason.
No, not at all. Our defense is great. Two things come to mind here. One would be trap game, just because you look at the Bills' schedule after this week, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, New England, the next three. They have to, or in Dallas even, in Thanksgiving. So you have to look past this game, and it would be cutting out Cortland, because you look at the way Cortland Sutton's playing for Denver right now.
Right.
It seems him and Brandon Allen have that connection going. Sutton hit on so many deep balls in that Viking game. And Brandon Allen has been pretty good the two games he's been in there for Denver. So I think you got, if Tre'Davious White can shut out Cortland Sutton, then it should be a pretty simple one for Buffalo.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I mean, Cortland Sutton, he has been playing extremely well. Broncos aren't getting a ton of the quarterback position right now. You wonder if we'll see Drew Lock at some point. But yeah, I think that's a good point too about the trap game situation.
Let's get to a game that two other teams you write about that, again, might be ugly as well on Fox. 2-8 Giants, 4-6 Bears. Give me your word for this one. I'm not really looking forward to this one as much.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase here is sort of quarterback learning lessons, because I actually got a piece that's going up over at Big Blue View either Thursday or Friday about the lessons from Mitchell Trubisky's time in Chicago with Matt Nagy and some things you can learn about how to handle the quarterback position, both on the positive and the negative way, and how you can extrapolate that to what Pat Shermer's doing with Daniel Jones. These are two teams that are struggling. These are two offenses that are struggling. You know, defenses that, like, Chicago's defense is still good, but the Giants' defense has shown flashes. It's not going to be a fun game. I wouldn't recommend watching it unless you have to professionally, which is what I'll be doing Sunday night. So,
I want to get your thoughts quick on Trubisky, but mine would be bringing back Barkley. Two weeks ago, Saquon Barkley only had one rushing yard against the Jets. That can't happen. Pat Shermer doesn't really use Saquon, I think, that creatively. And with Sterling Shepard potentially coming back, this is the kind of game I think you have the Giants mostly at full strength outside Evan Engram. Let's see some more balance in the run-pass game, because we saw Todd Gurley run on the Bears a little bit last week. Saquon, I think, has the potential to do that as well. But real quickly, because we got a lot of games to get to, just what's the future in Chicago for Trubisky? Because it seemed odd that he played a whole half with a hip pointer, and then Chase Daniel comes in on that last drive in L.A. last week.
Yeah, that's a really questionable decision from Nagy, to say the least, because, you know, it's a 10-point game, and to sit your quarterback down at that point, that's, you know, a situation where you're really showing him and the team that you just absolutely have no confidence in him. And it's hard to see this situation sort of repairing itself from that. As far as his future, look, when I write about Trubisky every week, and you know, this week I was given the assignment to how would you fix the quarterback situation if you're Ryan Pace? And I said that you've got to get a veteran in to compete for that spot. And you've got to, even though you don't have a first round draft pick, you probably do have to draft a rookie quarterback again. You've got to really figure out this situation, because it seems like the Trubisky thing spiraling out of control. And had I written something like that, say back in September, I would have told you that the tweets and response and the overwhelming response would have been 70-30 at most, maybe even more like 90-10 in a negative light, saying, well, look, you know, Trubisky is still the guy. This time it was like maybe a handful of people saying, look, you fixed the offensive line, he still has it. But most people saying, if I'm Ryan Pace right now, I resign, or I fire myself, or I, you know, hire somebody that can actually scout quarterbacks, because clearly I got it wrong. And so it does seem like that situation is coming to an end. It is hard to see Chicago sort of continuing to ride with him. Now, maybe they do, and we're all wrong about that. But of course, the thing that's handed over everybody's head is they traded up, albeit just one spot, but they traded up to get this kid when Watson and Mahomes were still on the draft board. And so that decision is going to be you know, debated and discussed until the end of time. It looks to be the wrong one right now, and it's hard to see that relationship getting better going forward.
So Cincinnati, 1 o'clock on CBS, 5-5 Steelers, 0-10 Bengals. What are you thinking for this game, Mark?
Unless you're a family member of a player on this team, I don't know why you would watch it. I mean, you've got Ryan Finley, you've got Mason Rudolph, who's coming off a really bad game. You know, two teams that look to be, I mean, Pittsburgh's clawed themselves back into the playoff mix in a sense, mostly because the AFC is having such a down year. But this is a game that unless you have to watch it, like, don't, similar to the previous one.
To me, I'm looking to sit, I'm going to use bounce back because I think if you're the Steelers, I'm looking at the Bengals, and yeah, Ryan Finley did not look good against the Raiders at all. Maybe that's stopping me from thinking the Bengals might actually win this game, but maybe no Juju, maybe no Connor, maybe no Deontay Johnson. If this game's low scoring, I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers didn't bounce back, had a letdown from what everything had happened in Cleveland, and Cincinnati's still in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that could certainly play out. It'll be an interesting situation. Cincinnati's in a great position where they get to sort of evaluate Ryan Finley. I think we haven't seen much from him yet, but, you know, maybe, you know, Mason Rudolph, I'd like to see him sort of have a bounce back game of his own. But yeah, this is one that I wouldn't want to watch this.
We have a lot of those, it seems.
I know, it's not the best week.
Let's go to Cleveland, 2-6, 2-8 Dolphins, 4-6 Browns. I'm going to go first in this one. I'm going to say revenge for Landry. I think this could be a big Jarvis Landry game for Cleveland. Maybe Freddie Kitchens might dial some plays up for him, and Landry's starting to get going as the Browns have started to win again, which is a good sign, even though Beckham just hasn't had that explosive game of yet. You and I both love the job Brian Flores has done. Miami's competitive pretty much every game for the last 5 or 6 weeks with this roster, but it'll be tough for them to go to Cleveland and get this done, especially with really no running game. What do you think here?
Yeah, I think here I'm going to go with pony personnel. I've been very intrigued by what Kitchens has done with the return of Nick Chubb and the return of Kareem Hunt and put him in the backfield with Nick Chubb. I think some of their two running back packages have been, like I said, very creative. You're getting that buy-in from Kareem Hunt. You're seeing him being used as a fullback, as a lead blocker at times. And so I'm curious to see if we see more of that two running back package in this game.
To New Orleans on CBS, 5-5 Panthers, 8-2 Saints. Saints off the win against the Bucks. Carolina, still wondering if Kyle Allen is actually going to throw more touchdowns and interceptions. What do you think on this game?
Will Greer. Is this the week we see the debut of Will Greer? Mm-hmm. I mean, Kyle Allen, you know, showed flashes when he first started to see playing time, but over the past couple of weeks, you know, the Packers game and then the game last week, you know, throwing some head-scratching interceptions, some bad decisions. He's starting to miss reads. And you do sort of wonder if Carolina, they're probably going to be on the outside looking in terms of the playoff hunt, if it's time to see what they have in Greer.
I'm going to go with crushing Kamara, and I'm going to go crushing with a K because that's the only way this works here.
Right.
But Alvin Kamara has not had a rushing touchdown in his last 5 games. If the Saints are going to win in the postseason, it can't just be all Drew Brees. We saw that formula not work against the Falcons. They're going to have to find a way to get Kamara going on the ground to have any success. They can still beat Carolina if Kamara doesn't have a touchdown, but at some point the Saints are going to have to be a running attack with him and Latavius Murray more so than Drew Brees thrown through the air, especially if they go to Green Bay in January. So this is more, I think, setting up. The Saints should win this game. I think it's more a playoff outlook for the Saints than just this individual game alone.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, when you're starting to, you know, when you get into this time of the calendar year, you're starting to think about what you're going to look like in the postseason. We know that with New England. I think New Orleans is in the same situation too. They got to figure out what they're going to be offensively as we get into the postseason.
So MetLife Stadium, 6-4 Raiders, 3-7 Jets. My word for this one, I'm gonna go with off script. And the reason I'm gonna go off script here is you look at the Jets. Sam Darnold's played really well over the last 2 weeks. Yes, it's the Giants and the Redskins, but one thing that the Jets have done well over the last month is score touchdowns on their first drive, when they don't see ghosts. So if Sam Darnold finds a way to maybe get a 7-10 point lead early in this game, because it's almost a given the Jets are going to score a touchdown on the first drive. But what does Adam Gase do against this Raiders defense that has played really well of late? I think it's been interesting to see when the Jets step up in competition how well they can play, because I still believe in Darnold. And this is a game the Raiders, you absolutely have to win, especially with the schedule they have coming up if you want to be a contender. This is a real intriguing game, even though it's 6-4, 3-7 on paper. What do you think here?
I'm going to go with eye open, and I think the Raiders are starting to open some eyes around the world. I mean, I remember at the end of last year, I was on a show with Matt Waldman, and he and I were talking about the Raiders, and Marshawn Lynch had made this statement that, you know, they were just basically like one or two steps away from really figuring out what they were doing on the offensive side of the ball. And we're starting to see that come into play now. The draft selection of Josh Jacobs, I think he's been a tremendous addition to their offense. Derek Carr is playing, you know, better than he has in recent years. Now, he's not pushing the ball downfield. The yards per attempt is still low, but they're getting it done offensively. And like you said, Ricky, the defense is starting to come into its own. Max Crosby has had some great games recently. And so this is a team, you know, given what's happened in the AFC West, the sort of stumbles along the way that the Chiefs have had and the down year for the AFC, they could get themselves into the playoffs. But they do need, like you said, they have to come to the East Coast and they have to win this game. It's hard to see them with the way the rest of their schedule plays out, getting into the playoffs if they drop this one. So it's a huge game for them, but it's a chance for them to continue opening some eyes in the football world.
To Philadelphia, which you talk about a lot with Michael Kist, 8-2 Seahawks, 5-5 Eagles. Big game for Philly. What do you think here?
Panic. That's the first word that sort of comes to mind when you're thinking about this game, mostly from the Eagles' perspective. I think Seattle, look, you're coming off of a bye. You've got a chance to really sort of get into a nice little stretch run, you know, close some ground with the 49ers. But for Philadelphia, there's just panic setting in right now because it seems like even though the defense had a pretty good game against New England, their offense certainly didn't help them out. There are questions about Carson Wentz. There are questions about the receivers. Everybody's starting to panic in Philadelphia. The biggest news in Philadelphia right now is that Ben Simmons hit a three last night. Like, my Twitter timeline just exploded because they're like, we have something happy going on in our lives right now. And now it's people today are worried if, like, Aguilar's got a burner on Twitter where he's calling out Carson Wentz. And so it's panic time right now in Eagles land. I don't see them getting right against Seattle because Seattle's had 2 weeks to get ready for it. Russell Wilson is a much different quarterback to defend than Tom Brady. He's going to give them some problems. Yeah, these defenses aren't great, but I think Seattle wins this one, and then you see full-on just nightmare mode in Philadelphia. I don't think they're having fun right now.
I'm going walking wounded. Nelson Aguilar has been banged up, and who knows if he'll play. Alshon Jeffrey's starting to practice, but he hasn't played the last couple weeks. DeSean Jackson's out. Jordan Howard's out. It really is not much for Carson Wentz to work with, and what it really changes how you look at the Eagles going forward. And it's, and if you don't have most of your weapons going against a team like Seattle, odds are you're probably not going to have much of a chance in this game, like you said, especially with Seattle coming off a bye.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see Philadelphia putting it together in time. Now, look, there's a chance for them because we know that Philadelphia's defensive front can cause some pressure on quarterbacks, and Seattle's O-line has had its struggles. And so this could be a situation where they can put pressure on the passer and force him off of his spot. But that guy is Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you pressure Russell Wilson, you're just playing to what he does best, which is run around and create. And so it's almost like a worst-case scenario for Philadelphia because the thing they do best might play into what their the guy they're going up against does best as well.
To Washington, and another game probably nobody really wants to watch unless you're a family member or getting paid to watch it. 3-6-1 Lions, 1-9 Redskins. Mine would be ouch. Just yeah. Because I mean, you look at a Jeff Driskel against Dwayne Haskins, and I'm going to leave it at that. I don't really have an outside of ouch. What do you think of this one?
I'm going to go with impeachment, and here's what I mean by this. Obviously, nationally, we're talking about, you know, political impeachment, but I live in the D.C. area, and if there's one person that this area wants to see impeached, it's Dan Snyder. Mm-hmm. This area is just so tired of the Washington owner, so tired of what he's done to this fan base and to this franchise and how he's seemingly just run it into the ground. And so you will see an empty stadium. There is just no passion for this team. I will talk to like parents of friends of my kids and things like that. And they will all tell me to a person, like, I was a Washington fan growing up. I was here when they were winning their Super Bowls. It was so excited. And now I just can't even turn it on anymore. It's too depressing. I've lost my falls. I don't enjoy it anymore. So impeachment of Dan Snyder, that's where we're going to go with this.
Sounds like the Knicks here, but if Matt Patricia and his pencil don't find a way to win this game,
right.
I don't know what that's going to be. I don't care if it's Jeff Driskel. I don't care if they brought back Joey Harrington. Yeah. If they don't win this game, Matt Patricia's in trouble.
Yeah, you got to think there's a hot seat situation if they come out and lose to Washington and a rookie quarterback that's like, and I just do want to talk for a second about that moment that we saw with him on the sideline, with him trying to ask his offensive lineman, like, what can I do to help you? And I know some people thought that was a little bit negative. I looked at that as a positive. Like, he's just trying to do what he can to help the guys around him. And look, if he's doing something wrong, he wanted to hear it. If he was, like, screwing things up, he wanted to hear it. And so I took that as a huge positive for Haskins and his development. But that's maybe the brightest thing you could say about Washington right now.
Let's go to the late games. The only game on CBS, 4-6 Jaguars, 5-5 Titans. The other AFC South game is Thursday. This one is Sunday. Your thoughts on this one?
Watch it if you have to before that Dallas-New England kicks off, because there's not much to think about here. I would have been more excited if we had Minshew Magic still rolling. I do think sitting Minshew down makes some sense because it gives him a chance. We've seen this with other quarterbacks. Last year, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, when they had injuries and got to sit down, they came back and were better quarterbacks. So I think for the long term, this is good for Minshew, who I think can be a starter in this league. But this is a game that you just watch for that, like, 4:12 to, like, 4:25 window. You get, like, 13 minutes of football from the early games into that late one. Again, not one you really want to watch.
Yeah, I'll go quick here. I'll go Henry Hammer. Derrick Henry against that Jaguar defense, who could not stop Jonathan Williams last week. It might be ugly on the ground for Jacksonville's defense. Let's go to the Sunday night game. We'll do the Patriots at the end. 8-2 Packers, 9-1 49ers. Probably the second game of the week. If it's not on Fox, NBC obviously is the other game of the week. Your thoughts here with Rodgers versus Jimmy G?
Yeah, I'll go star power. I mean, this has the makings of your, like, Sunday night primetime matchup. You've got Garoppolo, you've got Rodgers, two of the well-known quarterbacks in this league. I think it's going to be fascinating to see these guys go at it. I think Garoppolo had a nice bounce-back game last week against Arizona. Yeah, he still threw some interceptions, but the four touchdowns, the late throw to win it, you saw some of the quick release. And I think from Garoppolo's standpoint, he's starting to get that confidence back in his lower body. You see this with quarterbacks that have that ACL injury. Last year was Watson and Wentz. It wasn't until mid to late in the season where they really felt comfortable in the pocket again. So we're seeing that from Garoppolo. You know, Rodgers is getting himself into the MVP conversation. Aaron Jones has certainly done some great things for that offense as well. The defense is playing better. This is going to be a fun one to watch.
See, this one doesn't really work if a certain player doesn't play. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to go Pack meet Kittle.
Oh, nice.
I think if George Kittle plays in this game, it changes it completely. Because let's be honest, I think if San Francisco had Kittle and a full Emmanuel Sanders against the Seahawks, you would have the case that they should still be undefeated. They're just a completely different team with George Kittle in the fold. Jimmy Garoppolo's a different quarterback, even though you have to give him credit for that comeback win against the Cardinals last week. Packers on the road's going to be interesting. We'll see if Aaron Jones gets more involved here. We saw him get more involved after that rough one in L.A. where all Aaron Rodgers did was try to find Devontae Adams over and over again. Does it go back to that balance? Having a week to prepare, I think, helps the Packers. But to me, it's about if Kyle Shanahan has all the weapons in play, maybe not Matt Breida, but if he definitely has George Kittle, I think that you changed the opinion of this game completely. If no Kittle, I like the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way to look at this game. I'm obviously, my fantasy team is hoping that Kittle comes back, but nobody cares about my fantasy lineup, so we should probably just move on.
Well, we'll get to nobody caring about my fantasy lineup a little bit because I think I have fun with that one. Monday night football game, 8-2 Ravens against the Rams. Rams coming in at 6-4. Huge game for them after their big win over the Bears, which I guess, even though the Bears are not as big anymore, it's still a big win for them. Your thoughts on Lamar going into L.A. on Monday?
Wade Phillips, I'm very curious to see how he tries to defend what Baltimore is doing on offense, how he tries to defend Lamar Jackson. We saw Bill Belichick. We were excited for that matchup, and, you know, Baltimore got the better of it. New England sort of went heavy at times, five linebackers at times on the field. I wonder what Wade Phillips does. I'm very curious to see what he has in store for Lamar Jackson.
I'm going to go Ingram inching for yards. Mark Ingram just is a completely different running back, it seems, with the Ravens. They mixed in some Gus Edwards, but Ingram's really been the big back for the Ravens because the Rams, it'd be interesting, if Robert Woods does play, it also changes this game because you have Woods, you have Kupp, you potentially could maybe have Brandon Cooks. So what really, if the Rams have all their weapons, you look at this game completely different as well because how many weapons can the Ravens guard at one time?
Right, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, if they have their weapons back, this is a tough offense to defend. So very curious about that. This is going to be a fun game to watch again, schematically. Very similar to the Patriots-Ravens matchup a couple weeks ago.
All right, let's get to the big one. 6-4 Cowboys, 9-1 Patriots, 4:25 on Fox. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, the whole nine yards. Going to be a lot of fun. We'll get into a breakdown of what you think, but let's do our word and phrase first. I'll let you go first, Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to go with MVP. And, you know, this is more a nod to what Dak Prescott is doing rather than Tom Brady, because we've seen this New England offense struggle. But the Cowboys offense is a very good offense. And Evan Lazar on Twitter was making the case that this is probably the best offense that the Patriots have played to date, in the sense that, you know, Baltimore, again, is a unique creature. You know, its offense is different in terms of your standard sort of NFL offense. This is the most complete offense that the Patriots have seen to date. Prescott is a very good quarterback right now. He's putting up elite type numbers. He should be in the MVP mix regardless of how they finish record wise. And so I think this is going to be sort of an MVP type game.
Yeah, I'll give you a word for both teams. For Dallas, I'm going corn maze, because I think this is going to be more of a Randall Cobb, Michael Gallup kind of game. No. Because Amari Cooper and Stephon Gilmore, it hurts my fantasy team because I have Amari Cooper and Ezekiel Elliott, but I'll live with it. I think you look at Cobb and Gallup emerging against Detroit last week when Darius Slay was on Cooper. I think if Gallup and Cobb can make plays, that's going to help Dak Prescott in the passing game, because with all his injuries in the offensive line, even though the Patriots struggle against the run, I don't really know how big of a game Ezekiel Elliott's going to have, just because it's really tough to see Dallas get that run game going. And for New England, I'm going to go a win's a win, because Isaiah Wynn's coming back. And Marshall Newhouse is less effective than if I took out a Metro card on a subway turnstile in New York City. So if the Patriots can't run the football with Sony Michel in this game, and Rex Burkhead, who played well against Philly, I don't know when they're going to run the football, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we're all hoping as Patriots fans that Wynn is perhaps the missing piece, you know. But if he's not, we're going to be for some soul searching come, you know, this time next week, because we're hoping that Isaiah Wynn comes in and sort of solidifies the offensive line. But other guys on the offensive line have struggled at times. It's not just Newhouse. And so we hope they'll be able to run the ball. You know, in talking to some people about the Cowboys, look, their interior pressure, their interior guys have shown some weaknesses. Their best combination up front is the edge guys, but we know how Tom Brady can handle edge pressure. So we hope that this is a bounce back game for the offense. We'll wait to see if it actually happens.
And the big thing is here is Mohamed Sanu, because I saw Tom Curran tweet on Wednesday night that there is a chance that he misses this football game. And if you don't have Sanu, and it's really just Julian Edelman, maybe if you get any more from N'Keal Harry, Jacoby Myers, it'll be interesting to see how much they use him, but how much they go to that screen game again. If they don't have Sanu, Tom Brady can't throw to Julian Edelman every play.
Yeah, and look, Dorsett, you know, he had a head injury on his touchdown catch.
He might be out too.
It might be a situation you've got Edelman, Myers, and N'Keal Harry. I mean, Julian Edelman get a double cover, you rely on two rookies to win routes downfield. And so the offense is a massive, massive question mark right now, and everybody knows that. And we'll still get enough from this defense to at least keep them in this game. It's just a matter of, can the offense make enough plays to put points on the board?
Yeah, I've just trained my mind to get used to 20-17 football games, just because this isn't the Patriot offense of old, and it's not all Tom Brady's fault. I mean, we've seen Josh McDaniels throw play action on first down a lot, because play action is really, it seems, the only way this Patriot offense can get something going. You drop Tom Brady back to pass, and boom, there's a pass rusher there within 2 to 3 seconds, it seems like. To me, it's just a different era of Patriot football. And it's not because Brady's had his struggles. To me, I'm more concerned with Tom Brady red zone interceptions. Right. I feel like his red zone decisions have been worse than past years. And he should have had like 2 or 3 against Philly. When they get inside the 20, I start to worry more than from the end zone to the other 20.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. And the red zone struggles have been something dated back to last year too, because red zone issues were an issue for them last year. And you saw some bad red zone interceptions, the one against Kansas City, the AFC Championship game, for example. And, you know, I think this is just sort of emblematic of things coming full circle, because you think back to the early 2000s and, you know, the 03, the 04 teams. I mean, those were teams that won with defense, they won with special teams, and they got what they could get from their offense. It was only sort of in the later years when Tom Brady sort of really grew into this offensive weapon and this passing force that we've seen, you know, in the Randy Moss and Wes Welker era and things like that. And so they're sort of back to where they began, you know, getting it done with defense and just getting what they could from their offense. And it was enough to win then. Will it be enough to win now in this new era? We'll see. It was last year. Will it be enough again? Who knows?
So are we getting glorious victory or melancholy infinite sadness Sunday night?
I still think we get glorious victory.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Dallas, they have some question marks of their own. Like, their offense is good, but that's going up against the strength of this unit. I think the linebackers from Dallas have been suspect at times. They have some good coverage players, but I think there'll be enough schematically to get some guys open. So I think it's going to be, like you said, another, like, 20-17 kind of game or 17-10 kind of game like we saw last week. I think New England has enough to win this one. And then, look, they get their last two big games on the schedule. You know, you've got Houston, you've got Kansas City, then the week against Cincinnati, and then, you know, you got the Bills again and the Dolphins sort of close it out. So they got some big games left, but getting through this one will be nice because if you're thinking about it, this four-game stretch with Philly, with Houston, with Dallas, with Kansas City, this was the real meat of their schedule. And some people were thinking 2-2 maybe. I thought 3-1 made the most sense, but the one that worried me the most was Houston. So I think they get this one.
Yeah, I thought 3-1 too, but I would say Kansas City is the one I'm more worried about with Patrick Mahomes, just because it's Pat Mahomes. I'm convinced he's a cyborg. I'm convinced all he does is he jump passes and makes 60-yard passes out of thin air. Because I just don't trust Bill O'Brien to beat the Patriots, even though the game's in Houston, but I digress. I'm going to go with the Patriots 23-20, kind of similar to the 2011 game where Brady finds a way at the end, threw a touchdown to Aaron Hernandez, and they somehow pulled off a win. I believe in Dak Prescott. I think he's a guy that just finds a way to make plays. If they can get anything going with Elliott or the other weapons outside of Cooper, they're going to have a shot. I just think, to me, also, Mark, it comes down to one thing we haven't discussed, coaching. I trust Bill Belichick more than I trust Jason Garrett. I think Garrett's going to find a way to screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. Like, the mad clapper, like, it's not sure. I mean, look, you know, Kellen Moore has done a great job. John Kitten, they've both done great jobs with Dak Prescott. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of a head-to-head battle, a match of, game of wits between, you know, Jason Garrett, Bill Belichick, I think we all know who most people put their money on.
So in addition to covering the NFL, you do a great job breaking down quarterbacks. So I wanted to talk about a couple of college quarterback-related things real quick. And, of course, the big injury this week, past week in college football, Tua Tagovailoa with the hip injury, not playing the rest of the season. You hope everything goes well with his rehab and that he can come back to play as quick as possible. Your thoughts on that injury, and what do you think of his NFL future? Does it change for you pre-injury to right now?
I mean, I think now you have to take the injury history more into consideration when you consider drafting him. I mean, look, he was coming off a previous surgery for the high ankle sprain, and he played on that against LSU. So I think people should have been given that some consideration. Anyway, now with this, it's obviously more of a factor. Mm-hmm. I think you will see him slide down the board as a result, especially since we're hearing that he's probably out for all of 2020. And so if you're a team like Cincinnati, are you really going to draft a quarterback that's not going to see the field for you right away when you need to do everything you can to get your rookie quarterback up to speed? So he might fall to a team like New Orleans, for example, that could probably have another year, Drew Brees, or if they move in Bridgewater's direction, they could wait on a quarterback. He could fall to New England, as crazy as that sounds. I don't know, people have been talking about that. So I think he does fall as a result. I don't think he falls out of the first round, because a player with this kind of talent – and with the medical advances we've had, we expect him to come back and to make a full recovery. But I do think he falls as a result.
I was going to ask you that real quick, because we've seen people look at the Patriots with Tua. I've seen mock drafts with the Patriots even in Jalen Hurts. Jarrett Stidham obviously showed some good things in the preseason. Who knows what his future might be? Because it seems like the Patriots aren't connected to the pocket-style quarterback. I'd be real interested to see McDaniels with a running type of quarterback.
Yeah, I think people have seen a couple of things, both what mobile quarterbacks have done to the New England Patriots defense, as well as Bill Belichick's own comments on mobile quarterbacks and the rumors that he wanted to go get his own Deshaun Watson after that, regular season game a couple of years ago when Watson came into Gillette and almost beat the Patriots and took that last second throw to Cooks to win that game, that they're starting to think that Belichick wants to move in that direction. I think Stidham certainly showed some promise. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they're viewing him as right now their next quarterback. But if a player like Tua falls into their lap, I think they change the calculus a bit. If a player like Jalen Hurts is there in the second round, maybe they do that as well. So you know, it's hard to pass up on good football players. And, you know, Belichick always talks about this during draft time. Like, you know, people try to fill needs and things like that. Like, we just want to, like, draft the best players that are available when it's our turn to make a selection. So if that's Tua Tagovailoa when they're on the board, or if that's a Jalen Hurts a little bit later in the draft, it wouldn't surprise me to see them draft that player.
Last question for you. For those who aren't familiar with Mark's former work at Locked On Patriots, there was a lot of Brett Rypien talk last year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we could have had it. It was probably one episode where it was just all about Brett Rypien, pretty much. So I want to get to know Mark. It's only November. We've got a long way to go to the draft. Who's this year's Brett Rypien for you?
You know, it's an interesting quarterback class this year because there are a lot of sort of similar last year. You get a lot of sort of top-heavy names and guys that – you know, people really know. And then there are some guys that are really sort of flying under the radar. And I think that there are a few passers that are going to come out in this draft that might surprise some people. And I'll say one that might even surprise you, and it's Nate Stanley. And it's because you look at every draft cycle, there's that quarterback that as we get into, say, January and February, you start to hear the buzz around him. People pay more attention to him. And it's usually sort of that pocket passer, pro-style offense type of guy, and that's Nate Stanley. And are there areas where he needs to improve? Certainly. You see, you know, the mechanics and footwork and in response to pressure in the pocket, and it sometimes leaves a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. But I was saying this earlier, I forget where, if you need somebody to rip a Band-Aid post route and just rip a throw, he can do that. If you need somebody to sort of run the pro style, play action, back to the defense kind of stuff, he can do that. And I think at times Iowa's offense this year has been a better offense, a much more effective offense, when they've gone spread and just really sort of thrown the ball, which is very different from where they seem to want to be, which is that power eye running game. And so I think Nate Stanley is going to have an opportunity perhaps at the Senior Bowl and then beyond to make some noise, maybe come off the board a little bit earlier than people expect.
I like it. I was not expecting that because you look at Iowa and they don't really have a great track record of quarterbacks because I'd be interested with Stanley because, like you said, Iowa doesn't really run – I don't look at Iowa as a passing attack kind of offense.
No, I mean, they're not. But when I was watching their game against Wisconsin, for example, mm-hmm. and you're seeing them sort of go to a more spread, we got to throw an approach because they're down and they need to come back, it seemed like the offense was much more effective. And so – yeah, I think there's something with Nate Stanley. Do I think he's like a first round or, you know, an early day two type of guy? No, but similar to another Iowa quarterback, C.J. Beathard, who was drafted earlier than people expected, I could see a similar rise with him.
So, Mark, we had you plug all your work going into the show, but tell the people how they can find you on Twitter. And if there's one or two articles you really want to plug for the listeners to check out, what would those be?
Yeah, Ricky, thanks so much for having me on. This was a blast. Again, people can find me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. In terms of work to plug, I'll mention something I wrote over at Matt Waldman's site a couple weeks ago. It was on Admiral James Stavridis and the conundrum of developing rookie quarterbacks. And I know it sounds super nerdy, and it was super nerdy, but Admiral James Stavridis is the former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO. He's got a great book out that's on leadership and lessons of leadership. It's titled, like, you know, True North, you know, Lessons on 10 Admirals and Leadership. And I equated something he wrote about Admiral Zhang He of the Ming Dynasty in China to quarterback development. And apparently, Admiral James Stavridis found out because he wrote me a very nice email. And it's not every day that you get an email from the former NATO Allied Supreme Commander. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I figured I'd plug that.
So, like I said at the beginning, if you're looking for someone to just sit down and hear him talk film and Hoss-Y Juke and all these great play schemes that I still it's tough to understand, but Mark makes it easier as possible to understand, you got to listen to Mark talk football. It's a lot of fun. Mark, again, thanks for joining me. Hopefully I'll have you back when there's better matchups to talk about, but it's been a pleasure. Thanks again.
Ricky, thanks so much for having me on. Like I said, this was a blast. Keep doing great work. The show is great, and I'm happy to come back anytime, my friend.
Thanks, Mark.
And welcome back. And once again, thanks for listening to interview with Mark Schofield. Thanks to Mark for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk football with us. I hope you all enjoyed it because I did as well. It's an absolute privilege to talk to someone like Mark who knows the game inside out. And we're glad we love guests. We would love to have guests come on and play Word Association every week. It's a lot of fun. And I'm excited to hear your words for these Week 12 matchups. And if you have one for Week 13 coming up for Thanksgiving and things like that, we would appreciate that as well. I'm excited for Cowboys-Patriots. As you listened to this interview, you heard my thoughts on the game. And again, I'm going to repeat them. I'm excited for this game. I have Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper on my fantasy team, and I'm a Patriot fan. So I think it's really conflicting. But I look at this game, and I think for the Patriots, their goal has to be to stop Amari Cooper. If Stephon Gilmore can lock down Cooper, it really... Because I think you can allow Ezekiel Elliott to get his a little bit because the Cowboys have struggled to run the football in recent weeks. You have to take away Dak's favorite weapon in the passing game, and that's Cooper. You have to let them beat you with Michael Gallup, and you have to let them beat you with Randall Cobb. And for the Patriots, I think it's simple. You got to get the running game going. You got to give it to Sony Michel. You've got to find a way down the stretch heading into December to get this ground game going because with the Mohamed Sanu injury, the reliance on Julian Edelman, Philip Dorsett's been banged up. They don't really have that explosive tight end that can go down the field a la Rob Gronkowski. You've got to find a way to play power football. And it's time for Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead and even a little bit of James White to find the way to get that balance on the ground. Now, the Patriots aren't going back to the Super Bowl. It's really that simple. But again, thanks to Mark, who knows everything about the Patriots, and I'm excited to hopefully we'll get him on the show again in the near future. I want to get into a little bit of college football to start off with. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the rankings stayed the same this week. Not much drama. You had Clemson roll over Wake Forest. LSU's defense struggled against Ole Miss, but it was really no surprise they won. Oregon blew out Arizona. Really, your disappointments were Minnesota losing to Iowa, but that wasn't that much of a surprise. Iowa's a tough place to play. Tanner Morgan's banged up for Minnesota. Be interesting to see how that goes for the Golden Gophers down the stretch. Although they control, I still think their playoff destiny beat Wisconsin, beat Ohio State, or Penn State in the Big Ten Championship. They're in the playoff. And Baylor took a hit. And give Jalen Hurts a lot of credit. Oklahoma was down 28-3. Of course, everyone's familiar now with the 28-3 comebacks. But Hurts was incredible in the second half. Made the plays when he had to. And he even had a turnover in the second half and still found a way to make a comeback. I don't know what happened to Baylor. It was really just a struggle for them offensively. Give Oklahoma's defense a lot of credit. But that's a hit for the Big 12. Baylor only dropped one spot in the playoff rankings. But even if Baylor wins the Big 12, I don't think they're getting in the playoff now. Yes, they would probably require beating Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. But now you would be a two-loss Oklahoma. And it's not as impressive, let's say, if you beat Oklahoma twice. To me, look at the playoff situation right now. Unless Georgia beats LSU in the SEC championship game, you're looking at LSU, the Big 10 champion, Clemson, because Clemson, I think, is going to go run the table. All they have to do is beat South Carolina and win the ACC championship game, which looks to be reasonable. Clemson's clicking on all cylinders right now with Trevor Lawrence. And I think you look at that Pac-12 winner between Oregon and Utah as getting that last spot. Justin Herbert's playing really well at quarterback right now. They had an impressive win over Arizona last week at home. Oregon's defense allowed just 30 points the last two games against USC and Arizona after struggling a little bit with Washington State. They had the close win at Washington, a tough place to play. Ever since that Auburn game, Oregon has found a way to play well. Justin Herbert, as I mentioned, 28 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. There's a reason why he's viewed as a top 10 to 15 pick, you would say, in the NFL draft. The Ducks just continue to find ways to win. Herbert this month, 7 touchdowns, 2 picks, and he's 41 of 54 throwing the football. But it's really their defense and their run game, I think, that helps Oregon a lot. And you look at C.J. Verdell, he had a big game against Washington State a couple weeks ago. I think he's really a key for that Oregon balance on offense. And for Utah, they're not really a sexy team, but they just find ways to win. Whether you look at their quarterback in Tyler Huntley, they don't really have an explosive wide receiver, but they pound the ball. Zach Moss with 13 touchdowns running the ball. Utah with Kyle Whittingham, you look at their team, they only have a win over one ranked opponent, that's Arizona State. They don't play another ranked team going forward. They go to Arizona this weekend, then they host Colorado before the Pac-12 championship. But Utah still put themselves in a really good position. They did win at Washington. That's a tough place to play in the Pac-12. Their only loss is they was a Friday night game at USC. And USC, likely if they beat UCLA this weekend, will finish 7-4. So not a terrible loss for Utah. But if the Utes run the table, they're getting in the playoff. Because you look at Alabama with the Tua injury, and hopefully everything goes well as rehab. I want to see Tua play in the NFL because to me, he's so much fun to watch, and it's terrible that we're going to see him not play the rest of the way. Mac Jones gets to start at quarterback, and it's a different Alabama team, because let's be honest, if they beat Auburn in the Iron Bowl next week, we talked about it with Alabama's sports editor, their student newspaper, a couple weeks ago. Their resume is just not good. And the only thing you have is the eye test. But I don't really know unless Mac Jones blows out Auburn. Again, Auburn right now in this week's rankings is 15th at 7-3. They're going to be a four-loss team if you beat them. They're going to have to beat them like 55-3 to even have a shot. Because you're not playing in the SEC championship, barring a miracle. And it's either going to be LSU that gets in as the only team, or Georgia and LSU get in. So to me, this is not Alabama's year. If Alabama got in the playoff this year over a one-loss Pac-12 champ and a one-loss Big 12 champ, then I think you have to reconsider making this an 18 playoff. Because you have to put some merit to the conference champion. You just have to. Because a lot of the time we've seen two SEC schools get in. And Alabama has had its case. Ohio State, when they were two Big Ten teams, and Ohio State did not win the Big Ten championship. Penn State did, but Ohio State got in instead. There's some merit. I've always said just go 18, put the five Power Five champions in, put a group of five, and then pick your two at-larges. And if you think Alabama's one of those two at-larges, you pick them. But to me, the conference champion has to have some value. And that's why I'm kind of excited for if Oregon does play Utah in a couple weeks in the Pac-12 championship, how exciting that game will be. Of course, the most exciting game this week is on Fox at noon on Saturday. Number 8, Penn State. Number 2, Ohio State. Ohio State's just been dominant. Justin Fields, if Joe Burrow wasn't having the great season he's been having, Fields would probably be in Heisman consideration. 31 touchdowns, one pick, over 2,100 yards passing. He's also ran for 10 touchdowns as well. They have a good running attack with J.K. Dobbins, who's rushed for over 1,000 yards this year. And Ohio State gets Chase Young back on defense after he had to serve that suspension. And you look at the way the Buckeyes play, they dominate everybody. So one of the things I'm interested in seeing in this game, if Penn State can hang in there, does Ohio State have enough to play a close game and find a way to win? Because they haven't really been tested yet. Penn State at least has, to a degree. They had that tough loss at Minnesota. Sean Clifford, though, bounced back in a big way last week for the Nittany Lions. They had to get a win, and Indiana hung in there. But Penn State at least was able to get the win, didn't have that emotional hangover after that loss. You have to respect James Franklin as the head coach. He's going to have them prepared for this game. K.J. Hamler is the guy you want to watch on offense for Penn State. 8 touchdowns, almost 800 yards receiving. He's their go-to guy. He can attack down the field. We have Jahan Dotson as well on the Nittany Lions side. He can make a big play. But really, it could be Clifford avoiding the turnover. He's been sacked 19 times this season, 6 picks. If Ohio State's defense can force turnovers at home and get out to a 10 to 14-point lead, this game's a wrap. But if Penn State can use their weapons in the passing game with Hamler, you look at Pat Freiermuth, the tight end, they have so many different guys that can beat you in offense. But I just like Ohio State's defense. I think Chase Young's going to make a play, and that decides the game. Ohio State's going to get a couple of turnovers. I would love for Penn State to win this football game. Be a great win for them on the road. Would really create more chaos in this playoff system, because now Penn State would be in the Big Ten championship. All the Nittany Lions would have to do to get in at that point would be to win their final game at home against Rutgers. And let's face it, it's Rutgers. Not that hard to beat them in the Big Ten. Ohio State still has Michigan next week in Ann Arbor. So this is a tough stretch for Ohio State. Penn State, Michigan, and most likely Minnesota, if not a second matchup with Wisconsin. And as we all know, it's not easy to beat a team a second time. So I would look at this game. I think it will be close going into the second half, but I think Ohio State's going to force a couple turnovers. I think they're going to find a way to win the game. Let's take a look at the NBA a little bit. And as I mentioned at the top, Carmelo Anthony, I think, is the big news in the NBA this week. He signs with the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers have had off to a terrible start on the young season. They've battled their own injuries. They have not much depth in the front court when you think about it. Damian Lillard's missed a couple of games, and they just needed some scoring. And you look at Carmelo Anthony, he's a guy that could at least create some scoring. Now, Terry Stotts has him as a starter. We all know Mel and the famous comment in Oklahoma City Thunder media day when he's laughing that he was going to come off the bench. it's a different road now for Carmelo Anthony. I've been surprised that he did not get a starting job right away. Or didn't have a job, period, when you think about it. He can help anybody off the bench, scoring-wise. He's still a really good scorer. He's not a good defender, but he at least makes plays. And I was kind of surprised no contender took a shot at him. He gets a lot of the blame for when the Rockets struggled early last season. But it wasn't Carmelo's fault. That relationship with Mike D'Antoni really wasn't going to work from the start. We all know his history with the Knicks. But for Melo to at least help some of those younger guys with the Blazers and be it maybe a third scoring option with Lillard and McCollum once Melo gets back into the groove of things, he's not going to be the player that he once was with the Knicks. And I think he never got enough credit for what happened in New York. Knicks have been awful for almost 20 years. The one or two good years they've had over the last 20 have largely been thanks to Carmelo Anthony for deciding he wanted to come play in New York. So you tip your cap to Melo for at least wanting to go that route and giving the Knicks at least a chance to be relevant. They're not relevant right now. But I'm excited to see the opportunity he gets. I think the Blazers need him. We'll see what happens with Lillard and McCollum going forward. We talked about with Gerald Brown last week from the SiriusXM NBA. You can't dig too much of a hole in the Western Conference, so you're going to be out of it quickly. Portland is 5-10 as we do the show, tied with San Antonio, who's lost 7 in a row for the second worst record in the West. Behind, only ahead of Golden State, who allowed Luka Doncic on Wednesday to get a triple-double in less than 30 minutes. Luka actually, I think, outscored them, out-rebounded them, and out-assisted them in the whole first quarter. You don't see that every day. So the Blazers need that spark. They need it right now. Can Carmelo Anthony bring that? Time will tell. They've allowed more points per game this year than they've scored. They've allowed over 115 points per game, scored about 112. Portland has a big game on Thursday against Milwaukee. That's a tough one to win at all. So the Blazers really, and they also only have one home win in the road, and their arena is one of the toughest places to play in basketball when you think about it. So the Blazers need to wake up, and they need to wake up quick. We'll see if they do it with Carmelo Anthony, but this is a team that a lot of people thought was going to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. They still can. They've got a pretty winnable schedule coming up. They've got Cleveland. They've got Chicago, they've got the Thunder, they've got the Bulls again. But then they got to play the Clippers, the Lakers as well coming up in a couple of weeks. So Portland's had to find a way to dig out of this really hole. They're not out of it, but they're one of the teams I think you watch early to see if they can recover. Also in basketball, Lakers are rolling. LeBron's got a triple-double against every team. Rockets have won 8 straight going into Wednesday night's game against the Nuggets, who have played well. The West is really shaping up right now. You got the Lakers, you got the Rockets, Nuggets, Clippers. Excited to see what Paul George does with Kawhi Leonard now that Paul George is back. And Dallas, of course, Doncic is amazing. He's finding a way to make plays every night. So the West, I think, is more exciting than the East, of course. That's no surprise to anybody. But Boston and Milwaukee, at least, both with 11 wins. Heat have 10 wins. We didn't really get to talk about them last week. They're off to a good start. They've won every game in the Eastern Conference right now. It's 6-0. In terms of that record, Toronto's 10-4. So that's your look around the NBA. A little bit of college basketball news on Wednesday. James Wiseman gets to come back in January. He has to sit out for about 11 games, according to the NCAA. And he had to give $11,000. As I'm going to get that real quick for you. He must donate $11,500 to a charity of his choice. But again, he comes back January 12th at South Florida. It's a big break for Memphis. A lot of people thought he could have been suspended for the rest of the season and maybe Memphis be ineligible for the postseason. At the very least, they get James Wiseman back. They're still a really good Memphis team. They're top 20 in the country. We'll see how they play without him. But for right now, Wiseman's going to be a guy you want to watch, especially if you're an NBA fan of a team that's going to be projected in the lottery. You like to watch James Wiseman. You'll love to watch Cole Anthony. A lot of good options that these teams can pick at the top part of the NBA draft this year. I'm excited to see what James Wiseman can do once Memphis' season gets going in American Conference play in January. I want to get a little bit into baseball as we wrap up the show. And to me, when you look at baseball, it's still the Astros situation. I don't really know what you give them for a punishment. It's really tough. I've mentioned it on the show a couple of times. That to me, it comes down to when they're kind of me again, like the Patriots of baseball. They skirt that fine line. They've gone way over it. If they're the only team doing this, and Rob Manfred gave his comments at the owners' meetings and basically gave the assumption the Astros, I think, are the only team doing it. So if that's the case, they're going to get hit with a swift punishment. I could see A.J. Hinch getting suspended. I could see Jeff Luhnow, the general manager, getting suspended. They're going to get fined. To me, it can't take away the postseason. You can't strip them of the title because really, what does it mean? They still won the thing. We all know they won the thing. We watch the games. It makes no sense to do that. Yes, it would be a lot of shame to forfeit your World Series title and take down the banner, but really, I don't think it does anything. You dock them a bunch of first-round picks. You dock them international money. The only thing is, you look at the first round, the Astros missed on Brady Aiken and Mark Appel and a couple first-round picks and still had a really nice run because of it. So the Astros, I think, also were one of the teams that draft better than a lot of people as well. So to me, it's tough to decide what exact punishment they should get. But if they're doing these things, and you basically it's out in the open pretty much. We'll see what happens with this negotiation that's going on in terms of Rob investigation, not negotiation, excuse me. The investigation with Rob Manfred, who he interviews, what information he finds out. But it's not looking good for the Astros at all. Of course, we'll keep you updated on what's been going on in that situation. As I mentioned, you had the first signing of free agency. Will Smith gets 3 years, $40 million by the Atlanta Braves. You would think he's going to be their new closer. Atlanta's got a couple of relievers they can go to now with Shane Green and Mark Melancon. I like the signing for Atlanta. They were proactive. They got it done right away. And I think this is a team that one of their weaknesses last year was in the bullpen. Will Smith was one of the best relievers in baseball last year with the San Francisco Giants. Over his last two seasons, he's been really good since coming back from Tommy John surgery. So I don't mind giving him about $13 million a year because, to me, he fits that bill. He's going to be 31 in July, so he's still got a lot of years left of him. Chris Martin, the Braves also signed, not the guy from Coldplay, the actual pitcher, 2 years, $14 million. I actually interviewed Chris Martin a long time ago when he was picked up by the Yankees. So I know I've talked with Chris before. He's a really good guy. Happy that he's at least been able to continue his career. He had some good moments with the Braves last year. If you look at Atlanta kind of piecing their bullpen together, that again was the weakness of their team. Do they take some of those young starting pitchers, eventually make them relievers? We'll find out. They have a lot of depth in their minor league system. So Atlanta's going to be a team to watch. And I could see them making a play for Madison Bumgarner to keep him in the Southeast and to be that frontline guy in their rotation that they need. Yes, Mike Soroka's had a really good rookie season. You look at Fulton Ewitz, you look at Max Fried. They have a couple of really good names in that rotation, but they need that veteran arm. And I think after Dallas Keuchel now being gone, Bumgarner might be a really good fit in Atlanta. Well, let's talk about a couple other things real quick. And I think one of the things I want to focus on, I didn't mention the top, but I wanted to mention it quickly before I get into the Yankees and Jacoby Ellsbury. What's happening with the minor league baseball situation, and you look at the great reporting J.J. Cooper from Baseball America has done, you look at what the New York Times has done, and you look at the proposal, there's nothing set in stone for what might happen in 2021, but for the possibility that over 40 minor league teams could just go away, or they form a dream league, an independent league. They take away a lot of the Appalachian leagues and Northwest leagues and New York Penn League teams, with the exception maybe Brooklyn moving up. That's the Mets team in short season. I have a big personal connection to this. As I mentioned in the first episode, I work at Pinstripe Prospects as a beat writer for the Penn League team for the Yankees, the Staten Island Yankees. And I've done it the last couple of years. I did it at Yanksville Yard as well. I live in Staten Island. I'm a season ticket holder for Staten Yankees. And over the years, minor league baseball has become a passion of mine. I love watching these players grow up. I love watching them develop. Every player has a story, and to me, I love telling those stories and excited to see when those players eventually move up the system and for some of them make their big league debuts. To me, I think it would be a shame for these small teams. Now, Staten Island's not a small town. Neither is Brooklyn. But it's like Binghamton, the Rumble Ponies, which is one of my favorite nicknames in minor league baseball. They would lose their team under this scenario. You can't take away these small market teams, not small market, I should say, small town teams, where all they have is minor league baseball, where minor league baseball is a great family activity. take your kids to the ballpark. There's a great promotion, a lot of in-game entertainment. It's a lot of fun. You get to watch young players that are major league affiliate. They have to find a way to fix this. You've seen over the last couple of days, like congressmen and women and governors and mayors get involved trying to set up things where this isn't going to happen. You hope it doesn't happen at all. It would be a real shame if it did. I think it would be a black mark on baseball. And one of the things you look at, Bill Madden, I thought, wrote it in the Daily News. You saw it on November 16th. A lot of it, this is what it says in the article. In the interim, the players would then go into what has been described as the Houston plan, in which instead of playing games, they'll report to the Major League team complexes, undergo analytics indoctrination. So why, if I'm going to draft, I get that if, like, say you draft a college pitcher, I cover a lot of MLB draft as well at Pinch Hit Prospects. You draft a college pitcher, he's got an innings limit, you can't use him. I think this works for the college pitcher in particular, or if you have a college hitter that's had a deep run in the College World Series and you want to kind of give him a little bit of a break, yeah, send him to the complex, have him look at things, that's great. You can do both without taking teams away. And of course, the Houston Astros are the one behind this. Why am I not surprised? The king team of analytics. They're the team behind this. We're going to get into this more as more information comes out about it. I had to talk about it because really the first time I've gotten the chance to on a public format. To me, it would suck to see a lot of these small market teams go away. Or small town teams. I keep saying small market, it's small town teams. But time will tell what happens there. Lastly, I want to talk about the Yankees. I want to talk about Jacoby Ellsbury. You know how many, if you're on Facebook at home, you go to your Facebook memories and you see something that you keep looking back at yourself. Why did I ever post that? Why did I ever think that? For me, one of those times I look back at my Facebook memories every year and I see a Facebook post by me saying how much I loved the Jacoby Ellsbury signing by the New York Yankees. And I would love to go back in time and tell past me, you're an idiot. But I think about it as, you know what? I've grown in my knowledge of the game since 2013, I'd like to think. And the Jacoby Ellsbury contract is one of the worst the Yankees have ever had. They finally decided on Wednesday, as I mentioned at the top of the show, to cut bait with that contract, release him out of the final year of his deal. DFA Greg Bird as well, who has had a lot of injuries over the last few years, just really never got healthy and lived up to the guy that helped the Yankees make the postseason in 2015. That's another story. Jacoby Ellsbury, of course, loses the $21 million. Well, he gets $21 million. The Yankees have to eat that. So really, they're paying $26 million to him because they have a $5 million buyout they now have to give him at the end of this season. Give the Yankees credit for this. They made a tough decision. Yes, you could say it's not as tough of a decision, but it still is because it's eating a lot of money, and you wonder how much Yankees are going to go over that threshold in the luxury tax this winter to get better. Will they add a Gerrit Cole? Will they add a Steven Strasburg? Or will they play kind of the B-tier type pitcher like a Hyunjin Ryu, a Madison Bumgarner, guys like that? So this doesn't help. But they added Esteban Floreal to the roster. They added Davey Garcia. They added Luis Gil, Brooks Kreske, Luis Medina, Nick Nelson, Miguel Yajure. Floreal, of course, being the young outfielder who's battled injuries. But you look at their pitchers, and yes, a lot of these guys in the 40 aren't going to be in the majors maybe next year. Although I keep an eye on Brooks Kreske in the bullpen. I watched him in Staten Island a couple years ago. And I love the consistency he has. And Luis Gil has a fastball that jumps off the page. Davey Garcia, of course, if you're not familiar, is most likely the Yankees' number one or number two prospect, depending on who you read, but I'm excited to see what he does in AAA before getting a chance in the majors this coming season. But give the Yankees credit for at least deciding, look, this roster spot is too important to waste it with Ellsbury. He's been on the injured list most of the last couple of years. The Yankees haven't seen him play, and it seems like forever. This is a guy who had the one good year at the Boston Red Sox, and where he was an MVP candidate, and then it just never happened. I always looked at it from when I looked at it back then, my past self thought it was going to be a good double top-of-the-order combo with him and Brett Gardner where they both were going to steal bases. They were going to give the Yankees a lot of RBI chances with first and second, first and third, things like that. And it just never happened that way. Brett Gardner stopped stealing bases. Jacoby Ellsbury never was able to get on base much. He had a .330 on base over the 4 years with the Yankees. That's not good. they needed more production from him. And when you look back at that contract, a lot of people blame Brian Cashman for not making the big deal for a pitcher. They blame ownership. You know why ownership hasn't really done it? Blame the Jacoby Ellsbury contract. I would argue the Jacoby Ellsbury contract cost them trading for Justin Verlander. It cost them giving big money to Patrick Corbin. And it might cost them giving big money to Gerrit Cole. Outside of maybe picking up the Giancarlo Stanton contract, the Yankees really haven't made a huge financial move since Ellsbury. And you can't blame them for being a little bit shaken by the fact that that move has really put egg on their face. It's not easy to recover from giving a long-term contract and watching it fail. Because quite simple, it failed. We'll see what happens to Jacoby Ellsbury if he plays again, but for right now, that's not a good thing for the Yankees. They made the right decision. But at the same time, you have to rip Cashman and Hal and ownership a little bit for what happened with that situation. But that was an exciting day Wednesday in terms of Rule 5 decisions. 40-man roster is getting finalized. We'll get into the winter meetings in a couple weeks. Hopefully we'll have a guest on to talk about the meetings when those happen. And we're going to get a lot of, hopefully, some hot stove news. Hopefully it's not as slow as last year. It was really slow a year ago. So my special thanks again to Mark Schofield for joining me to talk some NFL football and a little bit of college as well. Again, follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. That's at R-A-C-K, letter I, Nader like a Terminator 555. You can follow us on Twitter at Full Press Radio and at FP Coverage. Try to be back next week. Of course, obviously, Thanksgiving being next week. And we'll get to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving as well. So hopefully we'll record something before Thanksgiving. We'll get it up as well for you guys. Again, thank you for tuning in. This is Episode 3. If you missed the show live, it'll be up on the Anchor page. You go to anchor.fm. Just search Kicking It with Keeler. I have all my past shows on there as well. So feel free to check that out. It's anchor.fm/full-press-coverage. If you want to check that out, be my first two episodes there. I'm excited to keep this going. We'll be back with Episode 4 hopefully next week. So until then, you've kicked it with me, Ricky Keeler, and I'll see you back here the next time.